Okay, thank you everyone for coming to the sixth installment of this series of Shiurim. I haven't given this long of a series of Shiurim in a long time, and it's very satisfying, I think, to like go through a topic and like feel like you're really getting to know an area of halacha. So this is probably the topic that I've kind of been not excited about talking about, because I'm sure people are going to have a lot of questions, and I think I'm going to come off sounding like very extreme right-wing, and you're going to be very upset at me. So be prepared for that. Be prepared for that. It comes out with very, very strict conclusions. I don't know, maybe not. We'll see. So it's going to be divided into two parts, right? The first is, what is the source of this idea that there's a special set of behaviors, a special standard of behavior for in a shul? And that's we'll go through a few Gemaras, some in more detail, some in less detail. And then the second half is kind of skipping all of the many centuries in between the completion of the Talmud and the writing of the Shulchan Aruch code, law code. There's a lot of discussion in between, but we're going to skip to more practical halakha because I figure that's useful for people to review. So let's start with this half. I want to spend less of the time on this. So fewer questions is better. So most people understand that the source of the idea that you have to have a higher standard of behavior in shul is from this pasuk we read this past week on Shabbos. That you have to keep Shabbos and you have to have awe or venerate the sanctuaries of Hashem. So Sifra, the Midrash, early Midrash, says, Ezu Mor, what does it mean to have awe of the Beit HaMikdash? Lo yikanes the harabayas b'makelo v'tarmilo b'minalo Bundaso, Babak al Sha'al Raglav. So you're not allowed to go onto the Temple Mount, okay, not just into the actual Beit HaMikdash, but even the Temple Mount itself, with one's staff, backpack, shoes on, the money belt, with dust on your feet. Velo yasanu kapandaria. You should not make it a shortcut. You shouldn't be saying, oh, well, it's easier for me to just walk through the temple courtyard rather than to go around it. You can't do that. And obviously, if you can't make a shortcut out of the Beit HaMikdash, you can't spit on the ground of the Beit HaMikdash. The Gemara in Yevamos expands this a little bit. We don't need to spend much time on it other than to say that the end of the Gemara says, let's just skip to the last two lines of that Gemara. It says, I have derived only, okay, and that's four lines from the bottom of the English. In the Hebrew, it's the second to last line. V'einli ela bezman she'Beit HaMikdash kayam. That's only when the temple is standing that I know that this sifra we just read is true, because the Gemara just quotes the sifra, more or less. Bezman she'in Beit HaMikdash kayam minayin. So how do I know that this rule applies not only to the standing temple, but to the spot of the standing temple? Tamalumar, Tirao, you have to keep Shabbos, you have to have awe of these sanctuaries. Mash Miramur Shabbos Olam, just as there is no point where you can stop observing Shabbos, Afmora Amura Bimikdash the Olam, so too this awe of the Beit HaMikdash is also permanent, is also forever. So in the past, if you remember, we've talked about where does the idea that a shul, some of the rules of having a shul, having separation between men and women, for example, we had the shiur about mechitza, or images showing up. A lot of the early sources about how we got these rules about shuls actually comes from the rules that apply to Beis HaMikdash. So we're going to see that not only will these rules that we saw about the Beit HaMikdash come up, but even the idea that when the shul is no longer standing, that these rules maybe should apply too. Then the Gemara, the Mishnah in Brachos, actually expands the areas in which you have to have this awe, this veneration of the Beis HaMikdash. Two, it says the Mishnah, Lo yikel adam es rosho kineged shar hamizrach. You can't be flippant. You can't act disrespectfully or not seriously, even opposite the east gate of the Beis HaMikdash, which means you're not even on the Temple Mount. You're just right near it. You're not allowed to behave in a non-serious way. Because that is the place that is opposite the holiest place of the Beis HaMikdash. That stuff we all saw before. You can't go on to the Temple Mount with all of these things. And you can't make a shortcut or kikum mikalkum, and you can't sit. Okay. Good. So we know the rules for the Beis HaMikdash. How do these things extend to a shul? Are they the same? Are there slightly different rules? Do none of these rules apply? Says the Gemara and Brachos. Amar Rav Nachman, Amar Rabba Bar Avuha. Rav Nachman quoted Rabba Bar Avuha. Hanichnas Labeis HaKnesses, Amanash Olu Asas HaKabadariya. If someone goes into a shul and does not intending to make a shortcut, in other words, they went in for a permitted purpose, and then they want to go out the other exit because it's shorter, at that point, Mutar L'Asos HaKabadariya, then it is permitted to do so. Okay, this implies, of course, that at least some of the rules of the Beis HaMikdash, of what you're not allowed to do at the Beis HaMikdash, should apply to the shul also. Rabbi Avahu Amar, Im Haya Shvil Mi'ikaro Mutar. Rabbi Avahu actually makes this an even more lenient rule, which is that which wouldn't have applied to the Beis HaMikdash, which is that if there had been a shortcut that everyone had used before the shul had been built, then passing through the shul would still be permitted. So I don't know what the practical aspects of that are, because I don't think anyone would go into a building and then go out just to make it a shortcut. Maybe in a building where there was a room that had not previously been designated as a shul, and then they designated it as a shul, maybe that's how it would come up. But I can't see how anyone would say, rather than walk around Kadima, I'll go in the front door and then walk out the back. It's unlikely to happen. So it's not so practical. Amar Bichaba Amar Rafuna. Hanechnas Labisa Knesselis Palel. Someone goes into Dabin. Mojo Lasso Sukambinaria. Then you can make a shortcut. Basically, same principle. Okay?
When I was at New Jersey, I was telling you, I was like in that old bank building.
Yeah.
They like requisitioned rooms for like davening, like just because they needed a room, but people would, you know, go through it to go to the library or something like that.
Right.
And so you're allowed to go through it to go to the library, even if other people.
Yeah, yeah. So I guess that would be a practical application of Rabbi Avahu's idea that if you're in a building and one of the rooms becomes designated as a, but had not been previously, and it's the only way to get to another room, so then you can do that. Okay, Rukika Mikavachomer, you certainly can't spit on the Temple Mount. So what about, so first about the Temple Mount, and then about shuls. Amar Bibi Amar of Yehoshua ben Levi, Kol HaRokik B'Harbayis B'Zman Hazah, anyone who spits on the Temple Mount today, Gilu Rokik B'Bas Ino. It's as if he's spitting in the eye of God. Why? Shenamar, V'haya Inai V'Libi Sham Kol HaYamin. God says to Shlomo in Malachim Aleph, Shlomo davens that the Beis HaMikdash should be the spot to which not only Jews, but non-Jews, everybody, should be able to come there and pray for whatever they need. You know, and he lists all kinds of situations. So, sometime later, Hashem gives him a prophecy, comes to Shlomo, and says to him, I am in fact going to be paying attention to the location of the Beis HaMikdash in a permanent way. So, for that reason, based on that answer of Hashem, is why we still pray in the direction of the Temple Mount, because otherwise, once the temple is gone, why would we still be praying towards Beis HaMikdash? The only reason is because Hashem said to Shlomo, this spot that you designated as the temple location is permanently now where I'm paying attention. So, once we're talking about spitting and Beis HaMikdash, we're talking about spitting and shul. So, Amar Rava, Rukikav the Beis HaKnesses Sharia. Spitting and shul is permitted. Okay? Midi Dehava Aminal, just like people wear shoes in shul. Everybody here is wearing shoes. Nobody here walks into shul barefoot. I think a lot of people would be upset at you if you walked into shul barefoot. Right? No shoes, no service. Ma min al b'har habayis. Okay, thank you that you got that joke. Ma min al b'har habayis aser v'is haknesses mutter. Just as shoes on the Temple Mount are prohibited, but in shul they're permitted, after kika b'har habayis hu da'aser v'is haknesses shari. So too, spitting in the Temple Mount is not allowed. Spitting in shul would be allowed because it goes together with wearing shoes. So,
how do we know that wearing shoes is permitted in the shul?
It's not clear at all. It's just assumed at this point. Gemara will kind of come back to it in a way that explains it very well. But at this point, it's just they know that's the halacha, but they don't know why the rule is that you can spit, and Rava suggested that it's similar to shoes. So, Amar Leir of Papa Rava, so Rav Papa, the next generation after Rava, says to Rava, V'amri la Ravina la Rava, other people say it's Ravina, V'amri la Rav Ada Bar Masa la Rava, other people say it's Rav Ada Bar Masa, different students, different people of the generation after Rava, were all upset about Rava's assumption that shoes and spitting go together. Or one of them was. And they ask, you're saying that the reason we should say that that spitting is permitted is because it should be just like shoes. Why should spitting go together with shoes? Maybe spitting should go together with not walking through the shul as a shortcut, or not walking through the Beis HaMikdash as a shortcut. So, Amar Lei, so he says back to him, Tani Lof Mimina of Atamart Mikapendayo, he says, what are you talking about? There's already a rabbinic saying that spitting is connected to a shoe, not connected to a shortcut. So, I have an early source that I'm quoting to connect the two things. You are coming out of nowhere saying that I shouldn't be able to do that. So he quotes along. Let's not read it inside because it's mostly just a list of this some of the same things. But the Braita brings up two sources for the idea that you should not be able to wear shoes at in the Beis HaMikdash. They should not be able to spit in the Beis HaMikdash. One is that just as Moshe had to take off his shoes at the burning bush, and wearing shoes is not offensive. So if wearing shoes in the presence of God is offensive, when it's normally not offensive to other people, so spitting certainly. And the other one is that Mordechai had to take off the sackcloth he was wearing for mourning because of the destruction of the coming attempted destruction of the Jewish people. He was wearing sackcloth and praying, and he was told to put on clothing that was appropriate for seeing the king. So sackcloth, which is not generally considered offensive, you can't go to the human king. So certainly, if you're going to go to Hashem, if you're going to go to the King of Kings, then you shouldn't be able to spit, which is disgusting to people. Okay, so that's what the Braita says.
If spitting is disgusting to people, why would you even think that you could do it
in a shul? Good, so that is the next two lines. Exactly. So Amar Lei, this is so whoever it was that was complaining to Rava explains what he was asking. He says, "Ana hachi kami." That's what I meant to say. Neima hacha lechumra v'hacha lechumra. Maybe we should be strict about both things. V'ema harabayis asur b'minal le'alfa b'minal. So let's say that about spitting, we should learn that you shouldn't spit in a right, so just like you can't wear shoes on the Temple Mount, certainly you can't spit. And about basic nesses to shar b'minal, and a shul where you are allowed to wear shoes, says adial b'minal ulheter, instead of learning it from shoes and permitting it, nelef mi kapendaya lasor, but you still can't make a shul into a shortcut, so we should just be strict and say that making something a shortcut is not as offensive as spitting, and wearing shoes is not as offensive as spitting. In both cases, whether on the Temple Mount or in Shul, there's at least one of those that's prohibited, and so we should make spitting in both places prohibited. El Amarava, this is the key point that answers Dov's question, which is that a Shul is like one's house. Ki beso, just like your house. Ma beso akabandaria, kapit inish, arakika mina lo kapit inish. Just like in one's house, people would be upset if you walked into their house and walked out as a shortcut, okay? But they don't care if you wear shoes or if you spit in their house. This is when they had dirt floors. Af besekneses kaper dayahu da'aser. So to a shul, you can't make it a shortcut because it's like your house. But rakiko minal shari. But spitting and wearing shoes is permitted. Okay, so I just wanted to show you like how it comes out from the layers of the Gemara and this discussion. Without going through the entire next Gemara, just the beginning of it is, in source 6, is a brisa that lists all the things that we're going to discuss that are prohibited. But brings up a couple of important points as to the source of something. So, one is, we should, just, there's a line there of Amar Rav Asi, which is sort of like what Asi says, kind of the third, I don't know how to put it. In the English, it's like 20 lines down, it says Rav Asi said, and the Hebrew, it's sort of sticking out. Amar Vasi, Batik Nisiot Shebabavel Al Tznahin Assyrian. Shuls built in Babylonia are built Al Tznai. What does that mean they're built Al Tznai? On condition. What does it mean it's built on condition? So the commentators disagree about this. It means either on condition so that when they are dismantled, you can use that space for something else. That's one interpretation. The other interpretation is that that a lot of the things that this brisa listed as being prohibited in a shul built in Babylonia, you can do them even while the shul is standing. Okay, so says Rav Asi, even though that's true, the Afa Pikein, even though that's true, whichever one that is, in Nohagin Bahen Kalas Rosh, you still can't behave in a non-serious way. You need to have a serious attitude. You can't act flippantly, inappropriately in the context of a shul. Not only a shul, but even a shul when it's after it's destroyed. If it's the location of where the shul used to stand, right, you shouldn't behave in a non-serious way. So what does it mean? What's the standard for something that would be considered not appropriate, appropriate treatment of that space? Umay nihu, what is that? Cheshbonos, accounting. Okay, that just seems like a pretty serious thing. No, you can't do accounting in an area that is a shul, even used to be a shul, even in Babylonia. Alright, for the sake of time, we'll skip the rest of that tomorrow. And we'll go... I want to skip to page... for a second, and we'll go back. Skip to page 8. Page 8, number 18, on the bottom of page 8. I just left it here because it fit in this space better, but it doesn't really belong where it is. And it's a piece by Rav Schachter from YU, and he's quoting an idea from Rav Soloveitchik, explaining this distinction that Rava made a couple of times between a shul and the Beis HaMikdash. He says, "Ubir inin zad de mikdash me'at," in explaining this concept that a shul is a mini temple, a smaller version of a temple. Shemati mikvod morin v'rabinu agridas shlita. I heard from our teacher, Rav Soloveitchik, to call inin hamishkan v'hamikdash, hu liyoslanu makom yuchad livaid sham im hashchina. The entire idea of having a mishkan, of having a tabernacle, and having a Beis HaMikdash, is that there should be a special place in the world in which we can have a meeting with the divine presence, with God. And the truth is, this is accomplished both by the Beis HaMikdash and by a shul. Because if you don't have the Beis HaMikdash, we need a place to daven, a place to speak to God, so we have a shul. Ella shehavdel b'neihem, who? He says, but there is a difference between a shul and the Beis HaMikdash. She Beis HaMikdash hu Beis Hashem. Beis HaMikdash is God's house. V'shama anachnu mivakrim etzlo livaid ito yisbarach. And we go there, we go to Yerushalayim, to the temple, to meet with God in his house. That's when we're visiting him. V'ilu Beis HaKnesses hu beitenu. But a shul is our house. V'Hashem yisbarach mivaker etzlenu. And God visits us, Bechdei Livayed Itanu, in order to meet with us. That is what Rava meant when he said, in the Gemara we just read before, Ki beso ma, just like your house, ma beso akabandaria, kapit inish, or kika mina lo kapit inish, just like people would be upset if you went through your house, their house, as a shortcut, but they wouldn't be upset if you spit or if you wore shoes in their house. So to a shul, you can't make it a shortcut, but you can spit and wear shoes. Kulmar, what this means is, in the Beis HaMikdash, even spitting and wearing shoes is prohibited on the Temple Mount. The Beis HaMikdash, because the temple, which is Hashem's house, which is God's house, v'anachnu orchim etzlo, and we are his guests, Shaykh Yoser Hadin Shalmora HaMikdash. There, it is appropriate to have a higher level of awe for this space. About Beis HaKnesses, Shu Apitin Beisenu, but a shul, which is legally equivalent to our house, Vashem Yisrach Misarech Etzlenu Levayit Itanu, and God is visiting us to meet with us, Lo Mikre Ela Mikdash Ma'at. Then it's called a mini temple. It's a mini temple because it's still a space where we meet with God, but it's mini in the sense that it's our house and we have a special space for him to visit rather than the other way around. Because it's still a place to meet with God. But this rule of you should venerate my sanctuaries doesn't apply fully. At the end of the day, it's not God's house, it's our house. And the halacha requires that a person should only is only limited to behave in a way that you only don't have to not behave in a way that you would not behave in one's house. That's what's prohibited in a shul because of this pasuk. Okay, so that is the explanation of this concept. Now that we got that over with, and we understand conceptually what's going on here, what are the general rules, let's get into the categories of practical things. What are you allowed to do? What you're not allowed to do in a shul? We haven't really discussed to such an extent, other than the spitting and wearing shoes, we haven't discussed to such an extent what you are and are not allowed to do. So let's start with, let's do, I guess, in my mind, chronologically, which is, when can you even go into a shul to begin with, right? There are rules, obviously, about when you're allowed to go to the Beis HaMikdash. Presumably, there should be rules about when you're allowed to go into shul. So, says Shulchan Aruch has a whole list of times that you can and can't. It says, "V'lo mitaylin b'hem," you're not allowed to go into a shul to tour it. Okay? And the reason why this is very strict is, what if you come to a place where there's an old shul? Let's say you go to Poland, and you go to a shul where nobody davens anymore in Krakow, or in somewhere else in Europe, or somewhere in the United States, and it's a shul, so you're not allowed to tour. Okay, it's a problem. What?
What makes it a shul with no one davening?
It was a it was built as a shul.
But it was a shul. But
it's still a shul. It's built as a shul. People.
Nobody davens there. Then it's just an empty building. Right?
It's an empty shul.
Can you say some amount of people to basically make it not a visit, but actually like you're going there to daven?
So we'll get back to that in a second. But it's not clear.
What makes a building a shul?
It was built as a shul for the purpose of being a shul. They collected money and they built a shul.
And so that building is a shul.
Is a shul.
Even though people move out and it's abandoned.
It's a shul.
Cobwebs.
Yeah.
Critters.
Yeah. According to the just the plain rules here, yes, that's what it seems like. Yeah.
If we tear down this shul.
If we tear down this shul. Right.
That's okay.
So we can, you can tear down a shul. And then, so we're going to get back to this, but there is discussion about, and this is what's going to be relevant to this question, is are the shuls out here in America like the ones in Babylonia, in that they were built on condition, meaning that they could be used for other purposes either after they're destroyed or even while they're still standing. So does that apply here? And which one is it? Is it only after it's destroyed, or is it even while it's standing? Okay, so we'll get to that. But at least, ideally, right, you should be touring shul. Certainly shouldn't be touring, it's just not, right, it doesn't seem like an appropriate way to treat a shul.
Does it matter at all whether the building itself was built as a shul or whether it was built as something else and then a room became designated as a shul for a while?
Right. So once money is spent to convert it into a shul, it's a shul. But just because there's a place that you regularly daven in does not make it a shul. So if you have an office building and they always meet in a conference room to daven, that does not make it a shul. Or like someone is someone has shiva for a week and they bring a sefer Torah there and they're davening there for a week, that does not make your living room a shul. Okay, so that's one. You can't tour in it. You can't go, one second, in the fifth sentence, you can't go into a shul to escape the bad weather. Yes?
Given that the Shulchan Aruch saying don't tour in them, were people really taking tours of historic buildings at his time? Like, what does... I can't imagine he means what we mean by a modern-day tour.
No, I think it just means, like, walking in to see what it looks like. Probably not for historical reasons, just to walk in for fun. To walk in because...
Yeah. So you could go in for historical reasons?
No, I'm just saying that he's asking that there was no such thing as a historical landmark when the Shulchan Aruch wrote this, which is probably true, but people might walk into a building curious about what this particular shul looks like without having any religious purpose for it.
I assume lots of people were going to Svat to tour and to
yeah.
for
Absolutely.
A while.
Absolutely.
Just to check it out.
Absolutely.
You want to check out shoals then.
Absolutely. And there you don't even have this excuse of it's Babylon, like, oh, it's like the Babylonian shoals because it's in Israel. What? No, now I think he's talking about.
I thought at the time of the Shulchan Aruch, it was still storied as a city.
Oh, it's storied, but the shoals were being used.
Oh, okay.
Oh, I thought you were saying now, because if you tore it spot now, it's a big problem,
no,
right?
I thought even back.
Because you go to the Arizal shul and you don't daven there, you don't say Tehillim, just walking into the shul, and it's not Babylonia, so what makes it allowed, right? So let's say you do need to go into the shul for a non-religious purpose. You need to call somebody. Somebody's in the shul and you need their attention. So what you should do is you go into the shul and sit down with the chumash and learn a couple of psukim or say a dvar Torah. And then you can call your friend. So that it does not seem like you only went in to the shul to call somebody and not for a religious purpose. And if you don't know how to read and you don't know how to learn, you don't know any Torah, so what you do is you say to one of the kids that's in shul, or I guess an adult could be also, you just tell them, like, tell me a little piece of Torah, tell me a pasuk, tell me something, so that you are learning. Oh, yeshama at arkach yitze, and this is an even bigger leniency, which is, what you can do is at least sit down for a minute and have in mind, you know, that you're doing a mitzvah, shaha yeshiva behem mitzvah, because just sitting in a shul can be considered a mitzvah. So maybe this is a way to get around the touring issue, is to sit down and say, like, I'm having kavanah, I'm sitting in a holy space, and I have in mind that it's a place that deserves respect. Shnamar Ashrei Yoshev Itacha, because we read three times a day that happy or praiseworthy are those that sit in your house. Hayu Lebisak Nasa Shnei Psachim. Let's say there were two doors to a shul. You can't make it a shortcut by going through one door to the other. But if that's how we discussed the story in the Gemara, if it was the only way to get to that room before, and then they built a shul in the middle, you can continue doing that. Similarly, if you went into the shul, even if it was built as a shul, but you go into the shul and you went in for a religious purpose, then you can go out the shorter way out through the other door, even though at the end of the day it's like a shortcut. And let's say you go in to daven, you're allowed to go out the other door after finishing daven. Okay, that's pretty straightforward. Pnei halacha, Rav Eliezer Melamed, who is a Rosh Yeshiva of Har Bracha in West Bank, he applies this to modern day situations that come up all the time. He says, "Achin asr l'hikanes l'bisakneses kedei lahatin telephone yad." Your phone, your cell phone is ringing, and there's a whole crowd outside talking, and you want to take the call privately. You cannot walk into the shul to take the phone call. Shekein b'sakneses mekudash l'tefila v'torah v'lulah shar tzrachei adam, because a shul is intended specifically for the purposes of davening and Torah and not for other needs. By the way, one of the problems is that the men's bathroom is over here, and if you are somewhere else in the building and you need to use the men's bathroom, you have to walk through the shul.
You can go up and around.
You can go up and around. What?
That's not really a shortcut. Because after you do it, you go right back the other way. So.
Right.
It's just going to a part of the shul. It's not really a shortcut.
Uh-huh. Cutting through the shul.
I would just say Asher Yisrael Yosef on your way through.
What? You can't learn Torah if you need to use the bathroom.
Oh, I guess it depends how bad we have to go.
First Shulchan Aruch apply, if you're invited to Kiddush, or if you're invited to lunch or something from somebody at a different shul, so you go to visit their shul after you daven here in order to meet up with them, would you have to sit down or do something? You couldn't enter the shul?
Building is okay. We're talking about the sanctuary room.
So if it's in the building, it's just the sanctuary.
Yeah, yeah.
We have an archangel where the temple hall is kind of similar, same as the sanctuary.
Right, you're saying, yeah. So this is, yeah, this does definitely complicate it. I don't know, because it's not really complicated. It's complicated, also. I think, I don't think people would be. I'm guessing that women would not like to assume that this area is not the shul. You're not davening in the sanctuary, right?
Right.
On the other hand, it makes things a little more complicated. So I don't have a good answer to that question. What?
Depends on when.
Well, the status is what the status is. The question is,
if somebody's walking in during Kiddush when everybody's mingling in here together, it feels like this space has a different status than during davening time.
Right. Right, but it's complicated with this, because this is the halacha of the.
We shouldn't treat this as right. Just some place that can switch between tefillah and socializing.
Right.
That should be one or the other.
Right, because conceptually, what's going on here is we're talking about the sanctity of the space, and the space does not change with what you're doing in it. Right, it's more that what you're allowed to do in it is dependent on the sanctity of the space. Right, so we will conclude that you are allowed to talk about things other than davening here, and we will conclude that you are allowed to eat and drink here. But maybe having some level of sense that we're still in the shul to a certain extent is appropriate. I don't know.
Now, a shul is a building.
Well, I think we're talking about the room that you actually is.
No, but what I'm getting at is the plaza in front of the Kotel. That's not a building.
That's gonna at least count as a shul. If not, if it doesn't have the status of the Beis Hamikdash as Har Bayis, it at least has the status of a shul for sure. All the poskim think so, for sure.
Kotel plaza. So you can't walk in front of it because that's. Shortcut?
No. Right where the right next to the Kotel, not the area behind it.
Not the area.
Right, once you start descending on that little ramp down into the to the wall, and there's a mechitza there, that you're in the shul now.
Okay, why is that a shul? It wasn't built as a shul.
It was. They put stone there, and they put a mechitza, and they clean it up, and there's always bimas there. It's definitely a shul. There's davening there 24/7.
Right, but it's similar to your office. I mean, it wasn't built as a shul.
They designate it as a shul. In 1967, they cleared it out to be a place to daven. That has more status of a shul than if you go into the the tunnels, right? Is there? It's not a shul. I don't think anyone davens most of that area. What? There is one area where people say tefillin, and anyway, you should be careful there because that would be what we read on the first page. Of being connected the Kodesh HaKadosh, connected the opposite the holiest spot on the Temple Mount. Because of the Western Wall. Yeah.
But But when you talk about, like, not stepping in to take a phone call, you mean stepping in here, but you could enter the...
Yeah, you can take a phone call there or upstairs. Or, yeah, but I'm saying that you shouldn't specifically walk in here to avoid that, probably. And I'm not saying that I've been perfect about this either. I'm not pretending that. I'm just saying that we're just giving this share.
Walk in here to make this place your part of holy.
Yeah. Yeah.
But the alcove's okay.
I think the alcove's okay. But this has been a little bit of a debate between me and some of the other people in the shul about whether the alcove is part of the shul or not part of the shul.
Yeah.
And I feel strongly that it's a different room.
Because
I insist that when we need a minion, that people should not be standing over there and think that they count as a minion. They don't. They have to be in the room. I think it's a separate room. And that's what I think. I forgot the name of the author of this tshuva. Vashti Lecharav. Sfarik Posek in Israel. And he was asked about the Kotel. So, what did they want to do? He says, so they wanted to take pictures at the Kotel for a wedding. And they want to know whether it's okay. So he said, Pashut sheknisas chasan v'kala u'fam liasam l'rechavas ha-kotel, to go to the Kotel Square Plaza with the family. To the western wall, letzorech tzilam, to take pictures, in bo mishum dvar mitzvah kol ikar, there's nothing about that counts as a mitzvah. V'lachin etzem haknis asura, and therefore, even going to the Kotel Plaza to take the pictures is prohibited, much less taking of the pictures. They shouldn't even go in the first place, much less take the pictures there.
But the Rav said that if it's okay for your house. Right,
so you're saying people take pictures in their house?
Sure.
Yeah.
Not in someone else's house. Like, I can use my own house as a shortcut also, but I get annoyed when someone else is barges into my home. They pass through.
Like,
they
think
of my own house,
but
I get annoyed if other
home.
People just walk in and start taking pictures because
right.
They're like the inside of my house.
We're not talking about people just barging into your house. That's an invasion. We're talking about, for instance, your guests. You don't mind if your guests take a picture, right?
Yeah.
I would mind if they started...
But we don't hold by the same because we would spit in our houses, but we don't spit.
Spit now. In those days, you know, people used to. They used to have spittoons on the corners.
So, right.
I'm saying, but even then, they didn't allow for spitting, even though they thought it was acceptable.
Right.
So it's not just because it's acceptable.
It's all what social custom means, though. It's spitting is acceptable and it's acceptable. It's not,
right.
It's not.
So we need to. I think we need to distinguish between. Different aspects of what you are and are not allowed to do in a shul, because there are going to be certain things that you're obviously allowed to do at home, like talking about secular things you would do in someone's house, but you can't do in shul. And it seems like going in a house, you could go in a house normally to escape the weather. A lot of people do that. But you can't do that to a shul. So it seems like those rules have to be distinguished from the rules of other behaviors, like spitting and wearing
maybe
shoes.
Maybe the Rav is departing from the Shulchan Aruch.
I don't think so. He usually was trying to figure out the principle behind what the Shulchan Aruch says. So maybe, but I would guess not. But I hear what you're saying. It's a good point that maybe he's being overly strict about this, but he, at the end of the day, he, you know, without reading the rest of it entirely, he does say that he quotes another tshuva about lighting candles before a wedding and going into a shul, you know, as the bride for other reasons before the weddings, and that tshuva also said there's no way this is a mitzvah. It's nothing, you know. It's not not part of the wedding. It's not a mitzvah at all, and so it's not a reason to go into the shul. So this obviously complicates weddings that happen in shuls. You're going
to
say that?
A wedding in a shul is clearly a mitzvah, but the pictures beforehand
Right. So
this is not the wedding.
This is not the wedding in the shul. Right. This is just taking pictures in the shul. But sometimes you do take pictures at the chuppah in the shul, right? After the, or before the wedding, and there's the wedding itself. So Rav Uziel said you can't even have the wedding in the shul for a bunch of reasons. One, it's copying having weddings in churches. And two, because he thinks that, yeah, it's a mitzvah, but it's not the kind of mitzvah you would normally do in a shul, and it's not really, you're not going into it because, oh, I think it's the most holiest place to do it. It's because it's a nice shul, and you want to have your wedding there. It's not because there's a reason specifically you need to have a wedding in a shul.
Is there a reason to learn Torah Dafka in a shul? You can learn Torah anywhere.
It's established for both the purpose of davening and learning. We lane here, we have our doors here.
If you build a shul intending to rent it for weddings, it's also built for that mitzvah.
That is true. At the end of the day, I'm going to say that I'm not agreeing with Rav Uziel on this. I'm not saying I'm disagreeing. Rav Uziel was in Israel, and Rav Uziel was talking about shuls built in Israel, and maybe it could be stricter there. And outside of Israel, you could be less strict about some of these things. So, but it's... I think that for complicated situations that come up, you should definitely ask halakhic authority whether something is appropriate to do in a shul, is the point. Okay, let's say you are allowed to go into the shul, now you're in the shul, for a purpose that's allowed. What are you allowed to say, and what are you allowed to do? So starting with talking, source 10 on page 6, Batei Knesiyot, Batei Midrashot, you're not allowed to act flippantly in them. What does that mean? Kagon, schok, vatol, usicha b'teila. So just games, mockery, or idle chatter. Okay? So, playing games in shul would be problematic. Talking about baseball probably would not be okay. Telling jokes, probably not be okay. Hopefully there's an exception for drashot. V'in l'chashbim bahem chashbonos, and you're not allowed to do accounting in them, elam kein heim shal mitzvah, unless they're related to a mitzvah, kagon, kupa shal tztaka p'dun shuyim, such as counting up the money for tztaka, or the money collected to redeem captives. And you're not supposed to, generally speaking, do eulogies inside a shul, unless it's for a very well-known person, because then the whole community needs a space to do it, and the shul is built with lots of space and could be intended for that purpose. And also, if you're doing it for a person of stature, then it's not necessarily disrespectful to the shul to do it there.
But isn't it curious that the word for shul is in Beit Tefillah, which emphasizes the spiritual part, and Beit Knesset, which sort of emphasizes the social aspect of it?
Uh-huh.
I'm just saying.
That's a good point. The Mishnah Brura, as he is wont to do, right, he's always very concerned about what people are allowed to say. We talked about Lashon Hara about a week ago. And so he's also concerned about, he mentions Lashon Hara here, but other things. And it's worth reading through. Let's read it. Quickly, or at least part of it. He says, "Sicha b'teila hainu afilu sichas chulin," right? Just secular conversation that's not necessarily inappropriate. Shehi letzorach parnasa, financial issues. Even during the week, we're not talking about Shabbos. Debechutz shari. Everywhere else, this type of conversation would be allowed. V'seknes is aser, but in shul, it's not. U'befrat. Sicha b'teila gamri is something, and certainly, specifically, something that you shouldn't even be talking about other places. You should be avoiding that everywhere. Zara Kadosh, Parshas Vayakel, Hiflig Ma'od, Begodol Alonazah. And so apparently the Zohar in Kabbalah, it talks about how terrible is the sin of speaking about inappropriate things in the shul. The Kol Shukin Sheyishli Zara Vizak Neses Vizak Medrash. Oh no, sorry. The Zohar talks about how bad it is to talk about things that are not appropriate. And he says, and then certainly you shouldn't talk about them in shul. The avon dibrim asurim, right? To avoid prohibited things to talk about in shul. Kigon, lashon hara, obviously he would mention that. Urachilas, he would obviously mention that. So, talk gossip, okay? Machlokas, having an argument about something in shul. Patatos, fight. Kimil vachim avonos chamurim od. Besides the fact that they're very bad things. It makes it even worse if you do it in a holy place. Because you are lessening or weakening the honor of the divine presence. And one who sins alone cannot be compared to one who sins in the palace of the king, lifnei hamelech, in front of the king. And then he says, not only that, you're making other people do sins. Right? That an opening made by water is further widened by water. The water breaks through, and then the river slowly breaks it open. So, breaks open, and grinds down the land. So, once you open, it's basically saying you open the floodgates. Umitchila hutchal avon beiza anashim ubesof islat yislaktu beishabros chabros lavrit ishperu achnasa kovis kenes kemidua gedola. If you start talking about other people in shul, then that's going to lead to big fights, and before you know it, the whole shul blows up in a big fight. So he is very concerned about talking about people in shul, because it leads to all kinds of terrible things. So we don't have to go through the rest of it, but it's all worth reading as a reminder. Now, the reality is that we do talk about other things in shul. And what is, so the Aruch HaShulchan, so here's a classic example of where the Mishnah Berurah and the Aruch HaShulchan, who lived not too far in time away from each other, come out very differently on an issue because of the Aruch HaShulchan's experience as a rabbi of a shul as opposed to Mishnah Berurah. Chafetz Chaim was never the rabbi of a shul. He was just a posek and a teacher. Aruch HaShulchan was the rabbi of a shul. So he says, V'yish l'tzmoa ma'asha achshav me'kim l'daber b'peks Knesset, but the midrashos, achar tefillah. Lots of people talk after davening or after shir in shul, and in beis medrash. Kama d'varim shalchol, all kinds of secular things. Nasa keter, and it seems like it's permitted. People talk. People do. Everybody. We do it here too. We talk after shul. So, what is the basis for that? Nearly the sviya lahem. It seems to me that they must be assuming. Kishidas Ramban, like the opinion of the Ramban, which is Shisparti Batik Nisio Shababel Atznahi Nasios, that shuls built in Babylonia are built on the condition that they can be used for other things, Afil bi Shuvan, even while they are still standing and being used as shuls. Ludavar Shem Mikhrachin, for something that's necessary. And we consider all the things that we talk about after shul as being necessary. Okay? That's a big leniency by the Aruch HaShulchan. But that's another classic Aruch HaShulchan versus Mishnah Berurah, where the Aruch HaShulchan is trying to defend what is a universal practice, and if, according to the Mishnah Berurah, would be everyone would be doing a major avera. The Aruch HaShulchan needs to defend us, but I think what's important about the Mishnah Berurah is to at least keep in mind that some of his concerns are legitimate, and that maybe we should be more conscientious about what things we talk about after davening, if not to be silent. I think it's I don't think I could be silent for the whole time of the shul, but I do think that it's worthwhile to think about whether it's even what I'm saying is an appropriate conversation to have in shul. I think that makes sense. Okay. What is it appropriate to do in shul? Almost done. You're not supposed to eat or drink or adorn oneself in shul. So put on makeup is not an appropriate thing to do in the shul. Tamid chachamim v'tamid deham, or getting dressed also. V'tamid chachamim v'tamid deham mutar lecha v'leshtos behem idochak. So the Shulchan Aruch says that that people who learn Torah and use the shul all the time, hear all the time, they are allowed to eat and drink in the shul, would be difficult to go somewhere else, because it's where they are all the time. The Rama says, "V'isha mimim to base a medrash apilu shalom idochak shari." And the Rama says that in base medrash, even that for people who are here all the time, presumably during a shir, I would say probably, you can eat and drink. The Rav Moshe Feinstein extended that to basically say, not just Talmid Chacham, anybody who's in shul can eat and drink, because that's how we practice. You can eat and drink, if you're going to be here for a long time. So you still shouldn't eat and drink during davening for other reasons, but... So, Einu She'enem B'Basic Neses, you're not supposed to sleep in shul, Afilu She'nas Arai, even to take a nap. Avabesa Medrash Mutter. But in the Besa Medrash, it's Mutter. It's anyone, if you ever walk into a yeshiva, you'll notice that people take what's called a base nap. And people, because it happens a lot that people, they get up, they stayed up too late, and they get up early for davening and yeshiva, or there's learning all day, and they just get tired. And rather than going all the way back to their room or going home or something to take a nap, they just put their head down on the table. Even on their Gemara, like take a nap so they can be replenished to learn, that is allowed in a shul. It's not an official term, it's the colloquial term is base nap. Base, like base medrash, base nap. It's a colloquial term, that's what people know it as that. I don't know. It's not a halachic term.
Sometimes
just,
they do it in shir too, so yeah.
Well, people, right, I mean, yeah. I facilitate people falling asleep at least once a week. Tzorach b'isa knesses mutter lachol v'lishen b'socho. If you need to be in shul, and if you're doing something you need to do for the shul, you can eat and drink there. Umitam zeh yishen b'leil yom kippur b'isa knesses. And for that reason, there are those that can sleep in the shul on Yom Kippur. I don't know anyone who does that now, but there was a time. But pilu tzorach mitzvah acheres, even for a different mitzvah, gon kisha niskab nikbatzim la'aber hashana b'isek nesas. They were going to add a month to the year. So now we don't add the months to the year. We have a calendar. But that was a type of meeting that has a religious purpose, but isn't learning or davening, that you would still be allowed to have a food on the table for that. Yachal arokbo. So it says that this is a strange thing. So you're allowed to spit in shul, right? So there are actually shuls even today where people do spit during Aleinu. Shem shtakvim lehava varik, and they spit. That because during Aleinu there's a line that was taken out at some point. It was edited out of Aleinu at some point in Europe, but it should be there, which is, they bow to emptiness, and the word for emptiness is rik, and rik is also rok, similar to spitting. So there are some people who spit during Aleinu. I have never been to a shul where I've seen someone do that. But there are actually conditions for spitting. V'vash ishaf shefeno raglav oshiyasham. It has to be so that you can get rid of the spit. You just have like spit sitting on the floor. Now, nowadays we have floors and not dirt as the ground, so we don't spit in shul. Okay, We don't have spittoons. Rsalovichik said, no more spitting in shul. huh? That's what I was saying. That's what I was talking about during Alenu. Spitting during Alenu. Imbishas binyan bisa knesses, his new Allah ishtamish bo. If during the construction of the shul they had made a condition to use it, mutzal ishtamish bo b'charbano. So the Shulchan Aruch's opinion is churbano, that you're allowed to use the shul that where there was a condition built ahead of time, you're allowed to use it for other purposes after it's destroyed. Avav yishuvo lo mahani tnai, but this condition doesn't work while it's standing. We do not pass in like the Shulchan Aruch. We pass in that even while the shul is standing and being used, the condition does work, and that is what allows us to have a kiddush, things like that in the shul. Vafilu b'churbano l'tashmish meguna. And obviously for inappropriate things you couldn't do in shul, even if you made this condition, such as planting or making counting.
Such licentious behavior.
Yeah. And a condition does not work in Israel at all. So things are much stricter in Israel. Mishnah Berurah says that you're also not supposed to do any type of labor, so don't bring your papers from work, bring them into the shul, and like, let's say if you're a teacher and you're like grading papers in shul, like, shouldn't do that. Okay, so...
What's so bad about planting?
About planting?
Yeah, why is it disgraceful, planting?
I guess you should, it's like it's dirty. It's like a thing that you do in the field. It's not something you do in a house.
Okay.
I think. So.
Yeah, we think of planting as like beautification. I probably think of planting as like crops for the year.
So it's
like I'm gonna put a bunch of potato plants right here. And so
yeah.
Less gardening and more labor.
Yeah. Okay. So. Okay. So. There's actually a debate about what kind of size of meal, what kind of meal, for what occasion you can have a meal in shul, even if it's built on condition. So the Mishnah Berurah quotes the Magen Avraham as saying that you can have a meal, but it's very limited. You can only have bread and beans, something very limited. You can't have any alcohol. It can't be a big meal. So that would pretty much knock out most of the kinds of meals that we have here. Because we do have alcohol, we do have absolutely. So almost every time, you know, this would be okay, but almost every kiddush would be a problem, right? Rav Moshe Feinstein, as I mentioned earlier, so he wrote a tshuva about bringing a seeing eye dog into shul. I'm not going to go into all the details of. He does permit it. I'm not going to go into all the details of why. But he, in that tshuva, along the way, he talks about eating in shul, and he has very interesting things to say about it. And he says, "V'kevan shurak achilu shdia," that bringing an animal into shul is just like eating and drinking. Hari lazam mehani tznai b'teknisur shavuchazarts. Then these conditions that you make outside of Israel should work. La'chol sham b'shas adchak, to eat there, when if you have to, af l'chol adam, even for everybody, not tamni chachamim could eat a baran sham shem ramban, the mahani etznai afil b'yishuvan, that conditions work even while the shul is standing, according to ramban. The inch im hitzrichu anshe yair la'achil b'hem aniyam l'hashkivam sham. In terms of if you have poor people and they need to eat, you could feed them in the shul. And he says, it seems to me, many people eat in shul and have kiddushes and whatever, when it's not necessarily, doesn't necessarily have to be done in the shul. Even for a minor type of mitzvah, kagon, you don't really have to. Everybody could just either eat before they come to shul or eat, go home. He says, universally accepted, that people eat shashas and shul. So he says, "Ba'af lasos mishta b'kriyas achasan to have an ufraf or bar mitzvah noagin l'hakel." People are lenient about that, bar mitzvah too, or bat mitzvah. Actually, it's a separate truth about bat mitzvah we're not going to get into now. Af she'in barashish b'za'in in mitzvah. Even though it's not clear there's any mitzvah. So he actually thought that people should stop having bar or bat mitzvahs in shul. He thought both were inappropriate, but that's a separate issue. But he says people do it, right? V'achasidim noagin v'chol batek nisto shalhen l'hatir af b'davar harishos mamish. He says people... chasidim eat in shul, even for something that's not a mitzvah at all. Kahada achilu shdi biyom yartzai, like eating and drinking on a yartzai. And he says, imkin v'chrachin lomar shenohagin k'rashi, must be, we hold like Rashi, v'agos hashri v'shem orzerua, shemutar al tanai afil v'shivan, that we hold that you are allowed to eat even while the shul is standing, l'achilu shdiya k'agavna af below dochak, eating and drinking or anything like it, even when it's not necessary. Nimsa shenifsak ata kein halacha. It seems like that's how we hold. Afim ulai rak b'doros achronim hischilu and hokein. Even though that's a more recent practice. So in the end of the day, we are allowed. We come out. We are allowed to have kiddushes and whatever we are eating in shul. It's okay. Which is important. Okay.
So
strictly speaking, they should be much, much more careful in Israel because none of these conditions work.
So they're talking the synagogue area, the prayer area.
In the sanctuary of the shul.
The sanctuary area.
Yes.
What they usually do is go to another room.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, in a lot of shuls, they have the space to do it.
Right.
They do that anyway. Yeah. All right, what about how you dress in shul? So we already talked about that on the Temple Mount, you were not allowed to go with your staff and your money belt and whatever. Actually, in a shul, you are allowed to wear those things in a shul. But, says the Shulchan Aruch in Source 19, page 9, "V'ish osim likanis bo b'sakin aruch ubarosh megula." You're not allowed to go in with a long knife or an uncovered head. Okay? So, so the long knife implies that weapons should not be in shul, and the uncovered head is unclear. Either it means you shouldn't go in without wearing something on your head, or it means that the top of the knife should be covered. Okay, so there are a bunch of tshuvos about in Israel, because there are a lot of Israeli poskim who were asked the question about soldiers going in, soldiers or security officers davening in shul. What do you do? You just can't leave your gun someplace. So the Tzitz Eliezer, who is the postdoc of Shari Tzedek Hospital, but also was very, very prolific in writing tshuvos, was asked this question, and he said there's two issues. One is this halacha in Shulchan Aruch, and the other one is that you're not supposed to bring a weapon into a Beis Medrash in general. And he concludes that there's four levels of standards in terms of whether you're allowed to bring a gun into shul. He says, ideally, you would leave it outside. If you can't, in a safe place. If you can't do that and you have to bring it in, then you should try to cover it up. And if you have a handgun, you should put it in the holster. If you can't do that, so then at least try to take the bullets out. If you have to have the bullets in, you know. So he has a whole four levels. And he says, by the way, you shouldn't have weapons on you, fully loaded, ready to go, on you and accessible and visible, even if you're davening not in a shul, just in general during tefillah, but even during not tefillah, you shouldn't have these weapons in shul. But he says if you're a soldier and it's wartime and you need it you're currently serving in the army, and you're legally obligated to have those weapons, then none of this applies. Then it's all about safety, and he says the only thing that applies is if you can cover it up, it's better to cover it up. But obviously, there's no obligation of any of that applies to a soldier. On page 10, Rav Mordechai Eliyahu dealt with the covering the head. So he said, he actually, it's the first time I've ever seen like a real standard of like what you're supposed to do when you walk into shul. So he says, whatever kind of hat you wear at home, you should wear in shul. So he says, if normally you wear a hat and not a kippah, you should wear a hat in shul. If normally you wear a kippah, you can wear at least a kippah, but the kippah has to be at least 1 by 1 handbreadth. Which is pretty big. And then he says, and ideally, he says, it should cover the majority of the head. Right? So the bottle cap kippahs would not suffice, according to Rav Mordechai Eliyahu. Alright. Last thing is keeping the shul clean. So the Shulchan Aruch says that if you have dirt, mud on your, or whatever, on your shoes, on your feet, then you should clean them before you walk into shul, and you should not have dirty clothing, you should be dressed clean, and you should clean the shul, no gemem kavod, you should have, respectfully, you should sweep the shul, you should clean the, mop the shul, v'noagin lahadlik behem neiros lekavdan, and we also light candles, I have a neir tamid in the shul lit there. So, getting back to Rav Schachter, the next paragraph after his whole description of the distinction between a shul and the Beis HaMikdash, he says, quotes the Mishnah Brura, who says that there are, that since wealthy people today, really everybody today, does not allow spitting in shul, Mishnah Brura says, therefore, in their house, says the Mishnah Brura, you shouldn't be spitting in shul either. So Rav Soloveitchik said that nobody would be okay with you walking with muddy or wet shoes or wet galoshes or wet boots going through the, and getting the whole house dirty. So too, you should not, if you have snow boots that are dirty or galoshes or whatever, you should take them off before you walk into shul. And that would imply that on a snow day, we should bring extra shoes to shul to change into and not get the whole shul dirty with our snow boots. This is muster for me too, though. I'm saying this for me. You know, I have made this mistake myself. As far as the cleaning, keeping the shul clean, Rav Mordechai Eliyahu has a very interesting story he has here. It says, "Mesupar al aviv shal Rashi," that Rashi's, there's some story about Rashi's father. Shalohaya marshal linkos as Aaron Hakodesh b'seknesses b'matlis om matata. He wouldn't allow them to use a cloth or a broom. Elahu hayab atzmo bezakin chalo minakas arna kodesh. He would clean the ark with his beard. Apparently, that was cleaner. The alkin kisharotzim linkos as ritzvas besaknesas. Therefore, when you want to clean the floor of the shul, lo yikach smartut muluchlach elanaki b'tov. You should take a clean rag, a clean mop, and not a dirty one. He says also there used to be that people would raise, and there are places I guess that still do this, that raise money once a month on Rosh Chodesh for upkeep of the shul, and that is an appropriate thing to do because it's a major mitzvah to supposed to have awe of the shul, and one of the things is to keep it clean and a nice place to be. Right. So you know, I think it's a lot to take in. It's a lot to take in. A lot of introspection that has to be done. I'm saying that to myself too. You know, but it's something to think about. And I think certainly when we come to a new building, you know, when we're able to be more conscious about new practices in the new building, we can think about how we use the space in a way that gives it the appropriate level of respect and kedusha and awe. Thank you very much for coming.